the emergence of what we call technopolitics instead of geopolitics.
Composable computing or disaggregated technology. You know, ingenious yet also commonsensical.
From Orion X in association with Inside HPC, this is the At HPC podcast. Join Shaheen Khan and Doug Black as they discuss supercomputing technologies and the applications, markets, and policies that shape them. Thank you for being with us.
Hi, everyone. This is Doug Black, Editor-in-Chief at Inside HPC. I'm with Shaheen Khan. He's Technology Analyst at OrionX.net. And this is another episode of our At HPC podcast. Shaheen, great to be with you again.
Great to be with you again. What are we going to talk about today?
Well, you know, the news never stops. So we have, I'd say the biggest news most recently is more problems for the NVIDIA ARM planned acquisition.
Yes, that was huge news. So I think the one that I noticed, and I know you wrote about it, was the Federal Trade Commission, FTC in the US, making steps to get in the way of the merger. You know, I was on the record as calling this deal like a done deal when it happened. So, clearly, I've been kind of wrong, but I'm worried that the window might be closing on this deal because so much has changed since they first announced it in terms of the politics of things and global politics of things and also NVIDIA stock price, etc.
It certainly has changed. I'm a little surprised that with all of these problems, NVIDIA is still saying we're charging ahead and we're going to change the FTC's mind in this case. They'd also have to change regulatory minds in the UK, Europe, China. So it seems like a hill to climb for them. In fact, one of the investment banks in New York now gives this a 5% chance of approval.
I saw that. And that's like down from, you know, whatever 30, 50% that it was before.
Yeah. And final thing, point is, when the deal was announced, getting on toward, I don't know, 15 months ago, it was a year ago, September, that's right. And at that point, NVIDIA said they expected an 18-month regulatory approval review process. But this FTC suit is saying this won't even come up until next August. That will almost be 2 years after the deal was announced. So, I don't know.
Exactly. I think that's actually part of the problem is that that period is really just long and a lot can happen. One big thing that has happened in the past few years is really the emergence of what we call technopolitics instead of geopolitics, with technology now taking a center stage in dictating geopolitical matters. And now this suddenly has become a global political hot potato, whereas maybe some years ago, it would have just been a yet another merger.
One point I want to run by you, Shaheen, is in some ways, this isn't as much of a blow. Let's say the deal does fall apart. It's a different kettle of fish from, let's say, NVIDIA was trying to acquire, hypothetically, AMD and, you know, buy their technology. In this case, NVIDIA still has access to ARM technology. So does everyone else. NVIDIA has its Grace CPU that it can continue to develop.
That's right.
So it's sort of, aside from NVIDIA not tapping into this massive and growing revenue stream that ARM would offer, if the deal fails, it's a different kind of a deal failure than the typical one.
I agree. And in fact, NVIDIA is also a founding member of the RISC-V Foundation. And they fundamentally really don't need this. I think neither of them really need each other per se. Both of them are end-to-end. ARM is more of a generic end-to-end. NVIDIA is an AI-focused end-to-end. And clearly, they can commingle all their technologies into better, faster products and IP that they can license. You know, NVIDIA is already on the short list, if not inside every company that is out there. So is ARM. So it's not like they gain. It's more a matter of degree, not kind, the way I see it. And in that sense, I think they can both carry on. And maybe ARM will find another home if they really need to be inside an entity other than SoftBank.
There's more ARM news. AWS at its big annual conference has announced Graviton 3, its ARM CPU.
That's right. They said that it's 2x the floating point performance, 3x the machine learning performance. The last one, Graviton 2, had 30 billion transistors using the TSMC 7-nanometer process. This one is a 55 billion transistors. So that sort of sounds like a 5-nanometer process. and likely with TSMC again, although I did not find a reference to that sort of a detail. They are using DDR5 instead of DDR4, so that's about 50% more memory bandwidth. They've got wider vectors, obviously because of the better process. They're also 60% less energy usage. So wonderful product, and I think they're going to continue to attract workloads. But they're, of course, also offering AMD, also offering Intel, also offering yeah. all manner of technologies, including quantum computing instances and their own efforts with quantum computing with Caltech. So definitely the juggernaut continues.
It's interesting, you know, just in our world that Graviton3 seems to be very much positioned around HPC, very much performance-hungry workloads, EDA, scientific modeling, things like that. So
we all know that I'm highly biased in favor of HPC, and I think long-term, there isn't anything that isn't HPC.
True.
Not anything interesting anyway.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe we should move on to our topic of the week, which is not something we can cover in the next 10 minutes, so we'll be coming back to this topic again, but composable computing or disaggregated technology, which was the topic of a very interesting panel at SC21. In fact, Silicon Mechanics has a white paper at the top of our homepage on this whole concept. I've just written a feature that looks at some of the newer technologies that might help enable and spur market acceptance of composable.
Now, full disclosure, I do have a business relationship with the parent company of Silicon Mechanics, but I was surprised to see the disaggregated composable infrastructure guide that Inside HPC is featuring actually include Silicon Mechanics. So that's nice to see because I think those guys do a great job.
Okay, great. So to me, I've been hearing about composable for several years. I think Liquid was the company 3 or 4 years ago at SC that kind of gave me a basic education on it. They were certainly one of the first and most active companies embracing this idea. But for organizations that have a variety of workloads that requires a range of technologies
yes.
to support the workload requirements, it seems like such a common sense approach, you know, ingenious yet also commonsensical at the same time. And I'd love to know what the market numbers are for composable.
No, it certainly has become more and more of a topic of discussion. And the companies that are pursuing it seem to be doing well. The way I see it is that it all starts with the fabric. Because if you are going to disaggregate, and if you're going to then recompose what you have disaggregated, they need to connect somehow. And it's the fabric that connects these resources in the way that is flexible. Now, what is that fabric? At one end of the spectrum, you've got the CPU interconnect, and it connects the CPUs and memories and such, and increasingly also the GPU, as AMD showed. At the other end of the spectrum, you've got Ethernet. And I think what's been happening over the past couple of decades is that a lot more is going on in between those two extremes. It started out with PCIe, and then, you know, with the I/O buses, Ethernet keeps getting faster from 10 to 40 to 100. And then you got InfiniBand and then OmniPath. And then recently you have NVLink and OpenCAPI and Gen Z and C6. And all that interconnect activity is really because there's a need for faster, but cheaper and more distance capable interconnects.
Distance is the issue, especially at the higher or demanding workload level, that you've got these pools of compute resources. And moving the data around the distance that must be traversed is the issue. In fact, I saw a tweet around this discussion during SC 2 weeks ago. The quote is, "Flops are cheap, moving data is expensive." And a big issue is not only the performant end of the interconnect, but also the power consumption end. And both of them need to be addressed if composable is really going to work at scale.
Yeah, you're right on. In fact, I used to joke, this is now about 10 years ago, when I was saying that moving data is the most expensive part of computing just when all the applications are going big data.
Yeah,
right. So be prepared for that. Now, in addition to the distance, the other part is the type of resource that you can disaggregate and reaggregate and recompose. It's easy to do that with networking, with disk. It's easy to do that with CPUs. When it comes to GPUs, you can do that. But memory is the hardest thing. Because it is hard, then you have to worry about, when am I going to do that? Do I do that at boot time, when I just boot a system with the right configuration? Or can I do it at runtime dynamically? And depending on the kind of fabric you have and the kind of reaggregation you've done, you may be able to do it in real time. And then finally, it's isolation between workloads. What level of isolation do I need? I mean, in the old days, you would just throw all the apps in one OS and it was a scale-up system and it all would run. And there was a lot of effort to do fair share scheduling and processor affinity and other kinds of really smart workload management within one copy of the OS. With the advent of virtual machines and now composable infrastructure, and in the old days, we even had electrical isolation with our dynamic system domains back at Sun, there's a big spectrum of just how big a wall can you put in between applications?
Yeah, all of this, as we were talking, that composable infrastructure, pools of technology resources that you, the IT manager, want to configure dynamically on an as workload basis, that would indicate what? That your environment has a wide variety of workloads with varying technology resource requirements. So
yes, the key word that you mentioned is workload.
Yes.
Composable infrastructure doesn't really, well, let's put it the other way. It shines when it is focused on increased utilization.
Right.
And increased utilization requires multiple workloads or multiple applications. And that is another way of saying consolidation. And it's important to understand that consolidation is all about the capacity that you did not use, because you can consolidate the unused capacity into a bigger capacity that some other application can now use. And that's how you get the benefit of it.
Right. Okay, Shaheen. Well, great chatting with you again. And I'll look forward to picking this up again.
Yes. Now, this one we definitely have to come back to, because there's what is ephemeral, what is persistent, what sort of policies do you need? All of that starts being some of the software and system value add that various vendors are doing. So looking forward to that.
Right. Okay, very good.
Thank you, Doug.
Thanks.
Take care.
That's it for this episode of the At HPC podcast. Every episode is featured on InsideHPC.com and posted on OrionX.net. Use the comment section or tweet us with any questions or to propose topics of discussion. If you like the show, rate and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. The At HPC podcast is a production of OrionX in association with Inside HPC. Thank you for listening.